Today is Thursday, August 30th, 2018. Goodbye, summer. This is John Williams. It's 11:16 in the morning, and this is the Mincing Rascals, the award-winning podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio. Listen for me weekdays from 1 to 3 on WGN and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
Better go, Chris, because he likes to go last.
Oh, I thought we were going to go in order. Oh,
well,
sorry.
No. Order is Eric goes last.
Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune, on a drawing board.
All right, Eric, what have you got?
I can't top that.
What have you got, Eric?
I'm Eric Zorn, the smooth-running column-writing machine, the Chicago Tribune. I appear three times a week, and you can find me if you know how to use Google.
So, Kristen, right, worth the wait, don't you think?
It certainly was. I'm glad he goes last.
Get to whatever the hell Eric was referencing there at the second half of the podcast when we go to Trump land. Let's start out in Chicagoland and Illinois. On the evening of October 20th, 2014, Chicago Police Department officer Jason Van Dyke shot and killed Laquan McDonald, firing 16 shots into the 17-year-old who in dashcam video appears to be walking away from police. In a Chicago Tribune interview this week, arranged and controlled by his attorneys, Van Dyke says, among other things, that he's not a racist. This may sound naive to you guys, but I haven't thought about this in terms of racism exclusively. Mostly, I see a cop gunning a kid down. I know they're trying to sort of manage expectations and set this whole trial up the way they want, but I don't see how his declaring that he's not a racist helps him, at least not much. What's your reaction to this?
I mean, it's hard for me to get beyond the cynical timing of this. He has not done an interview in 4 years. I've heard that he wanted to, but his attorneys told him not to. And they really didn't want to reveal to him. He wasn't able to talk about the shooting at all because that's all strategy that they want to save for the court case. But yes, I mean, to paint him sympathetically, the most riveting part of that for me in learning about him, which I don't think I had read before, was that he had never in 15 years, I think, on the force discharged his weapon.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit telling that this is not someone who's, trigger happy. But you do have to take into account that this is part of building up some sympathy and empathy for him as he heads to trial.
He had a lot of commendations for good service, but he also had a lot of citations for aggressive behavior, too. But he says he's never used his weapon, which is, I don't know, that's interesting, too. When I think of Van Dyke, though, I just think of a guy that shot a kid in the street, and the race, this may sound naive to you all, doesn't really enter into my mind. I don't think of his being a racist or not as mitigating the fact that we have video of him shooting that kid dead in the street as he was walking away. How does that help him, Eric?
Well, I mean, this is all about, you know, trying to influence the jury pool, right? This is why his attorneys had him sit for this interview. It's why they carefully controlled it. It's why they managed it. I can't remember a time before a major trial where a high-profile defendant has gotten front page coverage for an interview like that. It was a very strange thing to see, I thought.
So tell me about then the decision from the Tribune to do it. I mean,
I wasn't part of that decision.
There's real value in hearing from
the
him.
The story acknowledges it's very clear that this was a very managed interview. It talked about questions that he would not answer and so on. I was uncomfortable reading it. I really was.
Why?
Thought, like, because it was giving him this platform to say what he wanted to say.
With such a play, kind of.
With such a play without, it was very unusual. It was very unusual. Can you remember, have we ever done that with other high-profile defendants? Maybe other high-profile defendants never thought to do it. You got to give his attorneys credit because, you know, to the extent that this is a PR battle, and I also have to say that, you know, he is running against some pretty strong public relations headwinds. There are going to be protests outside the courthouse of people who are out there ostensibly trying to influence jurors, I guess, as they come in and out of the courthouse. They're going to be out there demonstrating against these.
So do you think the Tribune should not have run it?
No, I'm not saying that at all. But I'm interested in what, it must have been a discussion from you guys.
I listened to one of the reporters talk on another radio station about that, and she said, of course, they took that into account, and they pulled no punches. I mean, they pulled a lot of his records and talked about some of these cases that John raised. But we tell stories and then let the readers decide.
It was a story. I thought they framed. I mean, I'm sure there were a lot of discussions about how to play this and how to present it and how, because there is, because, you know, they're not giving this guy an interview because they want tough critical coverage. They want sympathetic coverage, and they want people to see this story. They want them to be sympathetic to Van Dyke. His attorneys wanted that. So how do you go into that? How do you present the story? How do you report it? How do you ask the questions? I wasn't part of these discussions.
I know
that,
I'm
sure they were part of it. They're very thoughtful people who were involved in this.
And two terrific reporters that did the story. Before, though, they reported the story, somebody had to make the decision to green-light it. Would you have green-lighted the reporting of it?
Yeah, sure, of course.
And would you have green-lighted putting it on the front page of the paper? You sound like you're not sure that it should have happened.
I'm not, you know, I guess part of my reaction was the photo of him that ran. I mean, seriously, it's part of the package that ran. It was a very nice photo of this, like a handsome guy with his beautiful eyes and so on. And it's like, I thought that was an interesting choice to put that focus there. No, you disagree. Tell me why.
Because I think they're parallel tracks. Whoever's prosecuting the case has to make the case that he's guilty, and that'll happen in a courtroom. Journalism is over here, and they want to tell a story that everybody is interested in. So why should they not do it?
I didn't say that. I was just saying that the photograph made me uncomfortable as a reader. I'm just saying. And I heard from
that's
a lot
what
of
looks I, like.
And
I heard from it's people. What he looks like.
Okay.
I think Eric would probably not make a very impartial juror because he's coming to the table with and we all have. I mean, I'm not suggesting in 4 years and watching the videotape we haven't, but I think that's what's tearing at you.
Oh, I think everybody's biased in this town, but it's not because of the photo of him or the color of Laquan McDonald's skin. Maybe a little bit, but it's because we have video.
You do have to look at this in the context that this is a larger issue of public, preconceptions and a publicity battle that's been going on about this case. Ideally, you want justice to be served and performed in an environment where the jurors are not infected by outside coverage. They're listening to the facts of the case. They're not influenced by the fact that Jason Van Dyke prays every night. They're not influenced by the fact that Laquan McDonald had all these friends on the street who loved him and called him Quan Dog. I mean, these things are not relevant to what happened that night. So people are trying to create these clouds of publicity around this case. I don't think, I mean, that is not an appropriate way to administer justice, in my opinion.
But this is all going to come out, and this is what's going to come out in trial, is his history.
He's not going to testify.
The Tribune is not the administrator of justice in this either. The Tribune is the teller of the story. The courtroom administers justice. You guys have a story to tell.
But don't you realize that, or agree that in their equation, they have, and when they were deciding whether to use it, they had to factor in that they were being played by the Van Dyke camp offering this interview.
But when you read the story, I don't feel like Stacey Sinclair or Christy Kukowski were getting played.
No, not at
they
all.
They said, here's where the attorney cut it off. These are the things he wouldn't talk
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
They told you how managed it was. I read that story and I thought, okay, this is exactly what it is. It's a play by him for sympathy, and they're going to try and control the message. And they told us that time and again in the story.
And those reporters, or at least Christy, had interviewed the wife a few years ago after this unfolded. So I think it was totally fair game, and they were, like you said, very upfront in all of it, and letting the readers figure out, you know, that we're not stupid, the timing of this, etc.
Eric doesn't want us to know.
He just didn't realize Jason Van Dyke was so handsome. And so now he's really uncomfortable with his own
I'll tell you what's interesting to me. Go ahead, Steve.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, how the... now I'm confusing two cases because Darlene Glanton kind of wrote about both Hadiah Pendleton's...
Hadiah Pendleton, yeah.
Is it Hadiah or Dia?
Hadiah
Pendleton's shooters... shooter and getaway driver presented themselves in court, and Darlene was writing.
Well, no, they didn't. They presented themselves in interrogations. I mean, the things she was talking about, those were interrogation videos. They didn't. We didn't do profiles of them. I don't think they talked to reporters. They didn't even testify. What the jury saw in that case was their exculpatory or self exculpatory statements in their police
in the story
interrogation.
In Darlene's column, you had pictures of those two young men in suits, with their hair neat and pulled back, dreadlocks, but still, they look handsome young men. And the point of her column was, what would have come of these young men if they had not grown up under the circumstances in which they grew up?
Oh, I thought you were talking about today's column.
No. Okay. I'm talking about one previously, just about the presentation of, the view of these defendants. And I thought, I think that's a very interesting question. I don't have a lot of sympathy for them, but I have sympathy for young men growing up in those circumstances. Those crimes come from somewhere.
It invited you to consider the possibility that these guys were not born evil.
Right. And that maybe they wouldn't have committed that crime if they'd grown up where my kids grew up, or
yeah,
with two parents like my kids.
Almost certainly not.
Certainly, why would they have? Right.
I did feel like they made a terrible mistake, and I feel sorry for all of the families in these cases. I do. They made a terrible decision and fired into a crowd, and they took a life. And so I feel terribly for Hadiya's parents. But I also, we were very forthright on our pages in not necessarily profiling them, but showing pictures of their mothers, too. That's a loss for that family, for these boys who are now going to, well, men.
How do you feel about the protests outside the courtroom? And how do you feel about when a cop is on trial, when a whole bunch of officers in uniform show up in the courtroom gallery? I mean, this sort of these demonstrations meant to move, I'm assuming, jury. I'm not sure what the statement is there to tell the jury something, right?
Well, out on the street, I feel maybe differently than I do a bunch of cops sitting in the benches at a courtroom. I'm okay with them protesting up front.
They have a right to, but it does make me uncomfortable. It really does. The idea that justice is being administer justice in an atmosphere where there's lots of unruly demonstrations.
Are there almost no sequestered juries anymore? I don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, will this one, the McDonald jury, not be sequestered? And
they might be during deliberations, but almost certainly not during,
during the trial. Right.
Probably not. It's very rare.
I was shocked,
anymore.
Really, that or not shocked, but retroactively surprised that the Manafort jury wasn't sequestered.
Not even during deliberations. Yeah, that was very
odd. I mean, when you had a commander-in-chief actively trying to persuade them and all of that, maybe are they just never sequestered anymore?
They're instructed to not, you know, go on social media and talk to relatives. And I mean,
right.
Do you guys have any sympathy for Van Dyke in that day he didn't want to shoot Laquan McDonald, and he made a mistake in the heat of the moment, and this is a guy who's worried that, you know, he's never going to see his kids again. He's going to go to jail for a very long time. He was a police officer who was there to serve. That was his job. That's what he wanted to do in a very bad neighborhood. And then he makes a mistake.
I don't even think he says he's made a mistake,
yeah,
though.
That's
I don't
true.
Even know if we can draw that conclusion.
His attorney would cut him off there and say, don't say that. Restrict that from the record. It was a very controlled interview.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit like the Blagojevich question, which we say, like, do you feel sorry for Rod Blagojevich? But Blagojevich won't admit that he did anything wrong. And in this case, I think you're right. I mean, I don't think that Jason Van Dyke got up. I don't think any police officer in this town gets up in the morning and says, I'm going to go out and kill an African-American young man, or I'm going to kill anybody. They don't want to do that. They know it's, you know, even in the most justified of circumstances, it's a terrible thing to have done. It probably stays with you the rest of your life. None of them want to do this. The evidence that I've seen so far suggests that he did this. He overreacted badly to the situation, and he made a terrible mistake, arguably criminal mistake. And if he did admit that, I would say, yeah, I mean, I would feel much more sorry for him than I do when I read the accounts that they give after the event, where instead of saying what actually happened, all these cops get together and say, oh, he lunged at him. Oh, he was, you know, all the crap
had
that they
knife
were saying.
Raised, yeah.
Yeah. And so my sympathy kind of begins to stop there, which is like, it's not like a terrible mistake that he made. It's like, there's a cover up. They started right away.
I know. But he was not part of the cover up and everything
account,
that happened at
his account was a lie
at
too.
City Hall. We don't know his account yet. He hasn't spoken yet. And
those other officers are going to be tried as well.
I'm not ready to say outright that he made a mistake, because I still feel we haven't heard his version of what was going on around, you know, the minutes leading up to that. We're talking about a spray of bullets that happened in what, like a matter of 9 seconds or something?
Right. So are we going to call it a mistake or 17 mistakes? I mean, there's one thing to fire off your gun in error or in haste, but he shot 17 times.
I've also heard police officers talking about this case saying sometimes you don't realize you're hitting the suspect. Like, did he not? Maybe he didn't realize that he actually struck him. Maybe
well,
he
here's
was,
a question.
I don't know. Those are. I want an answer to that too.
I don't know the answer to this question. I really don't. But when's the last time a suspect was shot by Chicago police officers 15 times or 16 times.
In 13 seconds or something.
Does that happen?
He was reloading, right? Wasn't he going to reload when his colleagues said, stop, don't shoot anymore?
Legally speaking, I think the first shot is the only one that really matters. The remaining 15 shots suggest sort of a state of mind, the fact that he wasn't.
We're all sitting here. We're not police officers. We're not trained to do this kind of stuff. It was dark. We don't know if he knew it in the first shot that he actually struck him. I'm just saying, let's all it's going to trial. All of this is going to come out. It's going to have more coverage than we could possibly desire. And just hold your fire, Eric. See what I did there?
Franz Spielman, your colleague at the Chicago Sun-Times, is speculating
today. Our bitter rival. What are you talking about, colleague?
Well, you're all
I love
business
Franz.
Journalism.
I know, but I'm saying she's a sister in ink. But
your archenemy, Franz Spielman, is speculating in a story, or at least is writing a story, that suggests that maybe Rahm Emanuel's not going to run for re-election. He hasn't officially filed, and a spokesperson for him, when asked about it, said, I'll absolutely not answer that question. And then she points out that the family's in a little bit of a transition right now. They've got a son going away to school or something like
that. Their youngest child is going off to school.
So maybe he doesn't want the job anymore. How shocked would you guys be if Rahm does not run for re-election?
I would fall off this chair. That's how shocked I would be.
And it's a fairly high chair.
It's a high chair.
I would faint. You would have to bring in smelling salts.
So Fran's just getting in front of that story in case it happens. If it doesn't, then it'll go away and nobody will remember it.
She's going to be hailed as a genius when Rahm doesn't run. I would be as shocked as Kristen. I would not fall off my chair, but I would, because I'm older than Kristen. My bones,
I would drag you down.
My bones are too brittle. I would shatter if I did that. He did start her, and her story does point this out, that he and his troops have been circulating petitions since Tuesday, which I believe is the first day that you... allowed to do that, and so the idea that he's not running, and also that he's got a campaign spokeswoman who we're supposed to talk to when we have campaign related questions. The campaign is underway now. Is he still? He hasn't, and he has, but she points out that he hasn't actually formally declared that he's running.
Right.
And so this is leaving him an out, technically. I mean, he could have announced and he could withdraw for that matter. But I think that it's unlikely. I think that he really likes the job. And I think that he looks at the numbers and realizes that he's probably going to be in the top two. He's going to have a one-on-one runoff with somebody, and that he feels like his chances are pretty good because he's got a lot of money and he likes the job. So I would be very surprised.
I wonder if the outcome of the Laquan McDonald case is going to affect his chances.
Well, I'm sure it will have an impact. I don't know which way, but...
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to figure out what the best verdict is for him. I guess that...
a conviction is much better for him.
Conviction is better,
I think people will be very upset if there's an acquittal in this case. There'll be protests and so on that will be significant.
I don't know if this seems trivial to you guys or not, but there is a bill on the governor's desk this week that would have raised the age to buy tobacco in the state to 21, and he vetoed it. In Chicago, it's 18 anyway.
I think in Chicago,
it's 21. It's 21. Yeah. It's 18. Many municipalities, including Chicago, have a higher age. But across the state, officially, it's 18. And then Evanston and Chicago can do what they want. And he did not sign that. That would have been an easy one for me to sign.
Well, maybe not. I mean, I think he messed up his own argument. I think he had a good argument when he said, look, you can serve in the military, you can vote, and you should be old enough to make these decisions, you know, if you want to stay out of it, that's what you could say. But then when he said, and besides, it could hurt vendors when the 18-year-olds might go across the state line to buy their smokes, you know, I think he kind of stepped in it there.
Well, I think that's part of it. Don't you suppose that it isn't a funny...
You don't want to propose continuing to sell cigarettes that are going to kill people because you don't want to hurt gas station owners in Harvey.
Well, it is going to cost the state about $30 or $40 million in lost revenue. Or if we lost $30 or $40 million in revenue because fewer and fewer people are smoking. And I think they have a problem with replacing those lost tax receipts.
I didn't listen to his veto message, but also, I mean, I would have vetoed it. When you're 18, you're an adult. And if you want to smoke, go ahead. I still get stuck on this. We send 18-year-olds to war, but we're not going to let them buy cigarettes.
And that's what the governor said, too, which I think that's a good argument. You can make that argument. It's just when he said that gas station owners are going to lose revenue, that was a bad
thing. The only thing I would tie to you have to go serve is that you should be able to vote. Right? The voting age should be the same because then you can at least vote to save your skin. I mean, I get that, but I don't see how because you can serve or may serve in the military that other things should be tied to that. I don't understand the connection between smoking and being able to serve our country in the military.
Well, it's about being old enough to make a decision about your own care, your own conduct.
I know, but
I can think of very few decisions more serious, more consequential, more even life-threatening at some points in our history than signing up for the military, than going into the military.
Well, I thought you were going to say smoking.
No. And so that if you are old enough to do that, then you should be old enough to smoke. You should be old enough to, but you should be old enough to rent a car. This really annoys me.
Right, you know,
my kids can't rent cars.
I know, I think mine
really,
too. Yeah.
That's really annoying. But
I don't want to rent my car. You rent yours.
The statistics are pretty good that if you don't smoke until you're 21, you're probably not going to smoke. And smoking is one of these habits that get kids pick up. They think it looks cool. They think it's part of some sort of a cool cultural thing. Very few people actually start smoking after they're 21. I share some of Kristen's just sort of nanny state aversions to this kind of thing, because actually, you know, maybe if we made it 25, we could save a lot of money.
Right. Or get rid of it altogether.
And they'd all rush to Indiana. You know, whole fireworks thing. When I drive to Michigan a lot, and as soon as you cross the border into Indiana, people are selling fireworks there. I'm thinking, well, why aren't we getting the tax revenue and selling fireworks so we have a few people with a few less fingers?
You know? Well, there was a legislator who proposed that this year, wasn't there? I'm pretty sure.
Our editorial board editorialized against it. Like, why would you put... I disagreed with that. I don't remember what their reasoning was, but...
Against the fireworks law?
Against legalizing fireworks in Illinois. You know, why should we keep introducing things that are dangerous and harmful? But...
Let's go to Trump land for just a minute. Our news click at WGNradio.com, and we have a daily web poll question asked, how long do you think Jeff Sessions is going to last? For some reason, late last week, I thought, he's not going to last another week. Maybe it was when he was saying, come on, Jeff. Literally, in his tweets, the president was.
What kind of a man is this?
What kind of a man is he? Kristen, how long is Jeff Sessions going to serve?
Dun, dun, dun,
and your options are...
Okay, yeah, give me a second.
The end of the week. The midterm election, the end of the year, or until the end of the president's term?
So I'm going to not choose any of those. The next time the president is in hot water for something with like Stormy Daniels related, then he will pull the trigger on Jeff Sessions to divert all of the media attention.
Can I choose the end of time? Because I think that might be sometime in mid-2019.
Mid-2019.
Oh, look at you.
I've got an exact date for you here. It's going to be November 7th.
Yeah.
The day after.
The first Wednesday after the first Monday in November, the day after the midterm elections. He wants Sessions gone, but he knows that it would just be cataclysmically stupid to do it before the midterms. I mean, there are voters out there who would be, I think, not happy if he does this to Sessions.
Republicans wouldn't be happy.
No, Lindsey Graham is totally giving him cover now. Mitch McConnell is pretty strong in favor of Sessions.
Well, Lindsey Graham also did say that whoever he nominates to be Attorney General has to promise that he's going to allow Mueller's investigation to continue.
So what does that mean, though? That's not binding,
right? Nothing means anything until after the midterms, in my opinion.
Do you think the Senate then should wait to appoint the next Supreme Court justice until the Mueller report is concluded? If you think about it, if it somehow or another fell into the lap of the Supreme Court, here's the president's appointee maybe having a say in what the outcome of some impeachment or other criminal case would be against him.
Wait, the president's appointee, who's known for opposing investigations of presidents, apparently.
Do you think that they should wait and not approve the president's nominee for Supreme Court until after the Mueller investigation's concluded?
Do I think they should? Yeah, I think they should. I think they will. Absolutely not.
But he's eminently qualified. Just get all this rolling. Put him in front of the committee for 24 hours like they have the previous... Nominees, get
rip
the roll call,
rip the
get
Band-Aid
him seated.
Off and vote for him.
No, but think
but
about
he,
that.
But he, could but he could recuse himself from any, you know, Trump subpoena cases and things
mean,
like
all
that.
All of these justices have some sort of little conflict like that in their past based on what they've
that's
ruled
a pretty
or how
big
they've...
One. That's if you're being a, if you were just appointed by a guy who's under investigation and you're going to be asked about that investigation. I think that's pretty... I mean, Elena Kagan, I know, recused herself from quite a number of things during the Obama years.
I would really like to see the Democrats refuse to take part in these hearings until the Republicans cough up all the documentary evidence that they're withholding on Kavanaugh, all the writings that he's had, the things that they don't want the public to see.
What do you think they're holding back? They went through his college sports columns.
When he was working for President Bush.
I think he's been pretty well vetted. He will be vetted.
The hearings will be nonsense. They always are. I'm not saying this is Kavanaugh, but the hearings will be just a complete show. They don't answer questions in those hearings. They haven't for decades.
Well, they can't. They can't, they say
they
anymore.
They can't
Do
say.
Do you think his faith will be questioned about the dogma that lives strongly within you?
Will he be able to say that Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided?
Can he admit that he goes to church? I don't know. We'll see.
Hey, Kristen, let me ask you a question, and I think I know how you're going to answer this. What did you make of the president's handling of John McCain's passing?
Oh, just
that's
so
what I
immature.
Thought you were gonna, oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought you were just going to say, this isn't important. It's Trump being Trump. We've had this conversation in various stripes before.
Well,
Let's move on.
Kind of what I'm saying. He's immature. He's a boob. And he acts that way sometimes. And this is an example of that. He couldn't be gracious even in a moment of McCain's death. So
the flag goes up. The flag goes down. The flag goes up. The flag goes down.
I keep thinking, what if Trump had really decided to be presidential when he was? I mean, maybe it's just not even in his wheelhouse, but I mean, there are all these little things that he could have done. He's got an economy that's going pretty well right now. And if he had just like been kind of much more of a normal president, had when McCain dies, you issue some sort of a statement that gushes all over him, and everyone goes like, "Hey, didn't you say nasty things about him a few weeks ago?" Like, yeah, well, that was politics, but this is different.
He could have just retweeted Bush. Oh. I mean, Bush's statement about him was lovely. He could have just retweeted. Mike Pence had a nice, lovely statement. And he could have retweeted it.
Even Obama. All these people who had strong differences with McCain were able to set those aside at a moment of his death and just say the right thing. This is what we do. You don't go to funerals and go, "You know, I never liked him. He still owes me money." I mean, who does that? You know,
I've never been to an Irish funeral.
Anything else in Trump land that is jumping out at you guys this week that maybe deserves the attention of our little podcast here?
Well, I keep thinking and wondering how much information, how much evidence is being withheld for potential state charges against people like Cohen and Manafort, because Trump does have the power of the pardon in his back pocket, and he can start issuing pardons all over the place. But if you are someone like Manafort or Cohen and you have been cheating on your taxes, your federal taxes, that is also a state crime because you've been cheating ostensibly on your state taxes.
Well, Cohen is being investigated,
he is
right?
He is. And Trump and the New York Attorney General is investigating Trump charities. I mean, I think that there is, there's this kind of fear, this conception that Trump is going to be able to make this all go away by getting rid of Mueller and getting rid of and pardoning everybody. That is not going to happen.
Trump is back at the media as the enemy of the people this week, too, Steve. We've gone from, I forget how he sort of softened it a week ago, but now it's
the enemy
of the people.
Not all, just the fake news. And then he said, 80%. But that's 80%.
Yeah. Right. And then he blasted us again today.
And in California, prosecutors arrested the FBI or who did it, arrested a 68-year-old man who was making threats to the Boston Globe. If you remember that when there was that sort of nationwide editorial about we are not the enemy of the people. It was organized by the Boston Globe, and apparently this guy then and several other times called the paper and threatened to kill people there.
I saw a thing about the sort of threats Rex Hubke gets. Somebody's actually sent letters on a couple of occasions to his home, and it's one of the few times, maybe the only time he said ever in his career, that he actually felt he had to reach out to the police and say, a threat has been delivered to my home about the things I've been writing.
Yeah, and Trump is to blame? Is that where we're headed?
I'm not sure.
I mean, disagree.
John Cass has said that there are people who have indicated to him that they know where they'd mentioned like seeing his children playing on the street. Do you remember this, Kristen?
I do. That was 10 years ago.
That was a long time ago,
right? It was a while ago, but I'm saying that, this is not the only time this has happened. And it's chilling. No matter when it is or who says it or what part of your affiliation they come from, it's a very chilling thing.
Well, you don't think that this sort of influences some of the nutty people, or it just makes okay? We have a culture of bullying these days, I can see how we would have a culture of violence when the president continues
Let me ask you this way, Kristen.
I mean, we had this conversation when when a newsroom was shot up, and the journalist there said, this was a guy who had a longtime vendetta against the paper that dated back decades, but here we are again. Going to tie Trump.
I don't think when we talked about Annapolis that we blamed Donald Trump for that.
That was the immediate reaction. Maybe not around this table.
A lot of stuff I was listening to. They said, "Well, we don't know yet, but there is this atmosphere. I'll give you that." But do you think that without Donald Trump in existence, that this knucklehead in California would have been writing to the Boston Globe?
I don't know
Globe?
Enough yet. That's why I'm not, we shouldn't even be talking. We don't know. Let's like, again, well, I don't know, but do I blame the president for people acting viciously in that way? I don't see that connection.
I don't want to say I blame the president, but I think there's a degree of responsibility. If you are,
it may not be A to B, but it might be A to C or D or E. I mean, he's certainly one of the dots along the way.
Then is Hillary Clinton, was she responsible for people?
Always
no,
to
I'm
Hillary.
Just saying, was she responsible for people who acted very viciously toward police officers who were, she had
if she was
Black
calling,
Lives Matter people on her stage at the Democratic National Convention?
Yeah, if she was calling the police officers the enemy of the American people, then she would be responsible, but she wasn't doing that. That's a big difference.
I don't take Donald Trump literally when he calls the media the enemy
of
the people.
Well, I'm glad you don't.
I don't.
All right, let's do our recommendations. These are the things that we are watching, reading, listening to, eating or drinking that we think you might enjoy. I've been watching the Stars docuseries on Oak Park River Forest High School. I think it's terrific.
How is it?
By watching, I mean I watched an hour of it. I watched the first episode, and then I've seen the trailers for the other ones. I interviewed one of the segment directors. I think it looks really good. The first episode I thought was terrific. It's just such an interesting insight into what life is like in a famously integrated high school that they say once you get in, you find out isn't so integrated after all, right? That the blacks sit here and the whites sit there. And I just thought it was so interesting to see the personal conversations between the slack leaning back in his chair, black kid, and the white middle-aged chemistry teacher talking about, hey, you've got to get your grades up, or whatever. I mean, literally, it can be that intimate at times. And it's just a window to what that part of the world is like that I've never seen.
This is from Steve James, right? The local documentarian who does Hoop Dreams and other... I don't subscribe to Stars. I'm not sure how I'm going to handle this. Maybe I can do a free trial or something. And
I think you can.
I mean, I'm just tired of subscribing to all these things. You got to watch. You got Hoop. You got to get. You got to get HBO. You got to get all that. I'm just like tired of it.
By the way, how many magazines and newspapers do you guys subscribe to? Do you subscribe
not
to a lot?
Not many.
Is that not significant outlay for you guys each month? Is your subscriptions to media? Because it is for me.
Well, I subscribe to the Tribune and Home Delivery, and I subscribe to the Digital Sun-Times. But that's we don't get magazines anymore. We just don't. I get so much magazine reading done online that I just don't. I don't
for
have
free.
Time to open up
for free.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, perfect. Same here. And I kind of steal we have passwords for Cranes and Wall Street Journal, and I just use those for the digital product. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you're the wrong people to ask, because professionally you need to be reading all of these things, and maybe the Tribune gives you access to those things that some of us don't have. So if I want to read the New Yorker or the New York Times, I have to pay for online.
I should mention, the New York Times, my wife gets that and I sponge off her.
Well, then that's you guys. Pardon me, your recommendation. What do you like?
Well, I'm reading this book called Bear Town. Have you heard of it? It's kind of a hockey story. It's fiction. It's very good, but I'm only maybe like 30 or 40 pages in, but I'm dealing with my summer garden. Do you guys garden? Do you have
herb garden in a pot?
Yeah. Do you have basil?
Yes.
Okay. Throw it in your gimlet. That's my recommendation. It's delicious.
Somehow she brings it back to cocktails.
I know. You have to. I couldn't
a whole
figure
leaf?
Out what to do.
Or do you?
You break it up a little bit so you get the flavor, but it kind of just adds like an earthiness, a freshness to your.
So roses, lime, vodka, and then a broken up basil.
Yes. See what you think. You might not like it. It might taste a little too earthy, like earthworm.
So is that your recommendation, or the book is the
both.
Recommendation? Okay.
Drink one while you're reading Bear Town.
Do the other. How about you, Mr.
Well, Sean? I hate to recommend another podcast, because people should listen to this podcast if they happen to have extra time. But the Tribune has just started a podcast called 16 Shots in collaboration with WBEZ, and it's all about the Laquan McDonald, Officer Van Dyke story. And the first episode, which is the only one that's dropped so far, I think, is excellent. And it does deal, it has this interview, and it has, but also has some really interesting interviews with Laquan McDonald's friends back from the neighborhood. And you listened to it, right, Kristen?
I have, and I've listened to people talk about it, and I know they talk about his personality.
And I thought that this was an excellent use of the resources of a newspaper and of a radio station and of the podcast medium. It's the kind of thing that I just think this is, it's new media, and it's really well done so far. Like I said, only one episode has dropped, but once you listen to the Mincing Rascals, you should try it.
unless you're a juror, then don't listen to that, because Eric doesn't want you to be influenced unduly. All right, thank you, Eric. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Thank you, Kristen McQuarrie. I'm John Williams. That's The Mincing Rascals, produced by LF Garris. We will drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.